Okay, thank you, Jason. I'll just wait a second for my disclosure to come up. Okay. So I have no relationships to disclose. So it has become increasingly clear that pilot and demonstration experimental projects are of limited value unless they are scaled up to have larger policy and programmatic impact. It has also become clear that proven innovations typically cannot simply be handed over with the expectation that they will automatically become part of routine program implementation. While everyone feels that scaling up promising practices is imperative, what has been lacking is systematic practical guidance to help facilitate this process. ExpandNet is a small network of public health professionals from around the world who've been working on and advancing the science and practice of scaling up. ExpandNet grows out of the WHO-sponsored strategic approach to strengthening reproductive health policies and programs. This is a process that 30 countries have used to identify and prioritize their scaling, not their scaling, their reproductive and sexual health needs, and to test interventions to address those priority needs, and to scale them up to larger regional and national levels. The term scaling up is widely used today with many different definitions. Given ExpandNet's background in the strategic approach, we started with the following focused definition: deliberate efforts to increase the impact of health service innovations successfully tested in pilot or experimental projects so as to benefit more people and to foster policy and program development on a lasting basis. Here, innovation refers to interventions which are new in the local context where they're being introduced, although they may have been widely introduced elsewhere or may be acknowledged as international best practices. Throughout our years of focusing squarely in this area, we've learned that scaling up is predominantly an organizational, managerial, and policy or political task rather than a narrowly focused technical one. It typically does not lend itself to a project perspective, rather requires longer term time horizons. We have assembled our learning from extensive review of the literature and from our members' practical experience with implementing scaling up initiatives around the world. This has led to a number of ExpandNet products. These include a book with a literature review and 7 country case studies of scaling up reproductive and primary health around the world, a document entitled Practical Guidance for Scaling Up Health Service Innovations, which is soon to be published by WHO, a shorter 9-step guide to developing a scaling up strategy, which we've used together with a set of worksheets to assist country teams who seek to scale up and expand successful pilot or demonstration projects. And lastly is a website which provides these and other tools, including a bibliography on scaling up resources and related materials. All of our products are informed by our definition and work within the theoretical framework for scaling up, which I would now like to introduce. The ExpandNet framework for scaling up is represented in this slide. There are 5 elements inside the oval: the innovation or package of interventions, the user organization or organizations which will implement the innovation on a larger scale, the environment in which scaling up takes place, and the resource team which supports the process of scale up, and the scaling up strategy. The scaling up strategy is comprised of 5 strategic choice areas. Before going into the elements of the framework, I would first like to highlight 4 key principles which inform all of our work. First, the ExpandNet framework is characterized by systems thinking, a concept from the management sciences that means in designing a strategy, one focuses on all the factors that influence scaling up, as well as on their interrelationships. The second key principle is a focus on sustainability, which is reflected by our definition. We want to achieve sustainable scaling up. When we expand innovations to new areas, we want them to last and become institutionalized in new settings and thereby survive. The third principle relates to the determinants of success. A great deal has been learned about why some interventions succeed and are spread to new areas and are widely used while others not. From the diffusion of innovation literature, we've learned a lot about what attributes or conditions predict scaling up success. If we understand what determines success, we can use this knowledge to shape and position our interventions in ways that enhance the possibility that they'll succeed and have larger impact. In our far-reaching review of multiple literatures and in assembling the experience of expanded members, we've identified the key attributes of success associated with each of the elements of our framework. Unfortunately, time is too short to go into these here, but they are fully explored in the tools I mentioned earlier. Suffice to say, the relative presence or absence of these attributes are major determinants of scaling up success. The fourth principle that informs all of our work relates to maintaining central values of human rights, gender equity, and equitable access to services. A key lesson we have learned is that these central ethical principles are easily lost as scaling up proceeds. People fall back on things that are best known, like getting contraceptive technology out to the clinics. But whereas issues such as client-centered services, counseling, reproductive rights, or gender perspectives are the first to be lost. I'll now turn to the five elements of the framework, beginning with the innovation. The innovation refers to the health service interventions or other new practices that are being scaled up. A key lesson we have about the innovation has been that the degree of change implied in it is a critical factor. In other words, how different is the innovation from the current practices in the organization, where the innovation is to be implemented? This has fundamental implications for what is possible regarding the pace and the scope of scale-up. Next, the user organization refers to the institution or organizations intended to adopt and implement the innovation on a larger scale. The user organization could be a Ministry of Health, an NGO, a group of NGOs, a public-private partnership, or any combination of these. While some leaders in the user organization may perceive a strong need for the innovation, the capacity to implement it may be weak. One of the key lessons is that even in weak systems, they have points of strength, and there are always leaders who are willing to take initiative and optimize the system within which they work. In designing scaling up strategies, one should identify and work with these champions and other points of strength. Next, the environment, which refers to the conditions and institutions which are external to the user organization but fundamentally affect the prospects for scaling up. These include the policy and political context, the bureaucracy, the health and education sectors, or other relevant government or donor agencies. Also part of the environment are socioeconomic and cultural conditions and people's needs and rights. There is a tendency to think that one understands what these environments are and what opportunities and constraints exist out there. However, we have learned that we often don't know enough about these environments. It is essential to do careful analysis throughout the process of scaling up, because particularly since these environments are constantly changing. A good example of this relates to health sector reform. In some cases, it can bring new opportunities to mobilize resources or connect the innovation to macro-level financing strategies like swaps. But that also means that we need to understand the process of reform and its effects. The resource team now refers to the individuals and organizations that have been involved in the development and testing of the innovation and/or seek to promote its wider use. Governments and even donors often feel that scaling up a successfully tested innovation does not require special support because they consider it routine program implementation. This is a fundamental misconception. Scaling up requires special support until the innovations are institutionalized. Only when the innovations have become institutionalized can they be considered routine program implementation. Now, the scaling up strategy. This designates the means by which the innovation is disseminated, communicated, transferred, or otherwise promoted. Designing a scaling up strategy involves making strategic choices regarding the type of scaling up to be used, the dissemination and advocacy approaches, the organizational choices that have to be made, choices related to resources and cost, and monitoring and evaluation. A critical aspect of our framework is that these strategic choices must be made in such a way that they take into account the nature and characteristics of the innovation, the user organization, the environment, and the resource team. This is part of our systems perspective. I only have time to go into the first strategic choice area, which relates to the types of scaling up, but each of these are explored fully in our tools. There are four different types of scaling up. First, expansion replication, also referred to as horizontal scaling up, where innovations may be expanded to reach different geographic sites or to serve different populations. Policy, political, legal, or other forms of institutional scaling up is also referred to as vertical scaling up. Diversification denotes testing or adding new interventions to an existing package. And lastly, spontaneous diffusion of innovation, when innovation spread without anyone guiding the process. We have found that it's instructive to look at each of the strategic choice areas through the lens of whichever type of scaling up you're working with or focusing on. For example, in thinking about how to undertake horizontal expansion, we consider diffusion issues, like how to manage training, what resources are needed to undertake expansion, as well as how to monitor if training is having the intended impact on a larger scale. When working on policy, political, and legal, and other forms of institutional scaling up, we have to think about whether advocacy efforts are needed to institutionalize the innovation within national norms and guidelines, or, importantly, in budgetary allocations. One of the key lessons we've learned about the different types of scaling up is that expansion alone is insufficient. One also has to focus simultaneously on vertical scaling up, that is to say, on the policy, political, and legal supports that ensure innovations become institutionalized, because otherwise, sustainability cannot be achieved. This has been a quick overview of the Expand-It framework. Many more lessons and experiences are described in our document Practical Guidance for Scaling Up Health Service Innovations. That's this one, and I have a copy if someone wants it. But they're available on our website, as I said. So we've found that the framework lends itself to a 9-step process of developing a scaling up strategy. Going through the steps outlined in our strategy development guide can help project teams assess the system within which they seek to scale up, to assess the scalability of their innovation, and help identify necessary actions to ensure successful expansion. To date, we've used our framework, tools, and methodology to support strategy development exercises with projects in Kyrgyzstan, Madagascar, Mali, Peru, Sierra Leone, and Yunnan, China. These projects have addressed a range of reproductive health interventions, from the development of increased access to public and private sector reproductive health services for migrants in Yunnan, to the scaling up of the introduction of the standard days method in Madagascar and Mali, which we'll hear more about on the panel today. The process of strategy development, as we've designed it, involves fieldwork with project staff and other key stakeholders, followed by participatory workshops using the 9-step guide and the related worksheets in a 2-to-3-day strategy development process. Now, overall, we feel the approach has worked well. Most teams have found that new perspectives emerge, as well as new ways of enhancing the possibility of achieving broader impact. But we've also learned that teams typically require follow-up after the workshop, and in particular, with the detailed development of operational plans. Thank you. Oh,
we have a minute or two, so if anybody has a question for Laura, this would be a good time to ask it. Do we have any questions from the floor? Okay, Karen, there's a microphone there, and if you ask your question into the microphone, it'll get recorded into the system. If anybody doesn't want to do that, you can just yell it up, and we'll repeat it here and put it in this microphone.
Sure. Those are quintessential questions of scaling up, and they just cut straight to the heart. As I tried to say, the framework has a critical choice area, which is associated with costs and resource. Let me go back a step. With cost and resource mobilization. So I wasn't able to give it the kind of attention that it needs here, but it is essential, and it cuts through both horizontal and vertical scaling up. It's often a goal of vertical scaling up to mobilize the resources, because they tend, although they can be mobilized at the more horizontal level, that happens at more locally as you expand and go to other areas. But if you can get institutionalization within the vertical systems, then you have a better chance of having wider reach. So it's a key focal area. And the other question, what was the other question? Related to, sorry.
The stamping on projects.
Ah, yeah.
And
ownership, yeah. An ownership question. That's a really good question. You know, some people have difficulty because they design a project as an NGO, but their intention would be really that the public sector would adopt it. Now, if the public sector hasn't had ownership of that process, the design and implementation of the pilot, it's often very hard for them to want to adopt something into the larger public sector system. They often will critique it and say, this was a boutique project, you had special resources, it's very hard for us to even think about it. That has often happened. Coming from the background of the strategic approach, for us, many of the projects that we've been associated with have been designed in such a way that they were to be implemented by the setting in which they were supposed to be scaled up, and that has been very beneficial in terms of ownership and leading to greater success and scale up. But you know, we're coming into contact more and more with projects that aren't designed that way. They seek to scale up in a different setting than in which they were tested. And what happens often is that there's a lot of that work that should have been done at the innovation stage has to be done at the scaling up stage, like involving the key stakeholders and bringing them into the process of assessment, even since you're maybe at that point. It really depends on what juncture, but can't say enough about really involving those people at the stage where at least many times what can be helpful is everyone's starting to have pilot fatigue, but the idea of doing sort of a validation in a different setting of the innovation can be very helpful. And in many cases, we've heard about projects that have had to do that. So thank you.
All right, thanks, Laura. In the original program, let me do my technology bit here.